Well, hello. I see you're back. I'm back. We're both back. Not much of an intro today, but I did want to kind of warn you. I guess not warn so much as kind of explain what's going to happen for these next couple of chapters. So, like I kind of explained yesterday, the next two are structured sort of to give, I guess what I was trying to do when I wrote it was give two different perspectives of these two main characters we've been following basically the whole time, but they're in two separate places, kind of going through two different things. So what I'm thinking is that every time that it kind of switches perspective, which is pretty often, I'll play a sound effect, and then you'll know that it's switching between each one. And hopefully, even if the writing doesn't express who it's about, the sound effect will at least give you an idea that it's switching between one or the other. And I tried to find a sound effect that was quick and didn't really interrupt as much, and it was between a sound effect that sounded like a laugh track that lasted less than a second, or one that was about 3 to 4 seconds. So I picked the longer one just to give you kind of a break, and because it's a little more appropriate, I guess would be the right word. And this intro, what you're gonna hear is I'll be talking and then I'll play the sound for you, and you're gonna hear the music kind of fade in, then the sound effect, then the music fade in again. I'm not like a professional podcaster, so I don't have a big mixing board and all that to do this, so it's going to be a little clunky, but you'll hear the typical kind of fade out that you hear every time the intro and outro stops, and then the sound effect, and then I'll pick it back up with more background music. I actually thought about playing with just having background music playing the whole time when I was reading, and I think maybe I might do that next time, but because I'm so far into this one, I don't want to change up the format too much. So, right now, I'm going to play you the sound effect, and you'll hear it, then you'll know. I'll come back in a second, we'll make sure everybody's good, and then we'll get into it. So, here is the sound effect you're going to hear every time it switches perspective. So that pretty much makes sense, right? The sound plays, it switches perspective. There's some gaps that are pretty long, you know, a few paragraphs following one or the other. And there's sometimes where it's a sentence or two and then it switches. So hopefully it's not too clunky. I wanted a small sound effect. I didn't want it to be like a 10-second intro and outro every time I switched. Hopefully it makes sense. And you will probably hear some variation in the audio because I'll be moving back from the mic, switching, putting in the interlude, switching back. It becomes a little interesting. And this way that I'm recording, I don't have the ability on my phone. I probably do on my computer. But on my phone, the way I usually record, I don't have the ability to kind of insert those sound effects just in the middle of a recording. I have to record, stop the recording, and then put another sound effect in. So it'll be a little clunky, but hopefully it doesn't take you too far out of the story, whoever is out there listening. So let's get to it. We'll move on to the chapter now. Thanks. Chapter 32, Exodus. Billy throws the last of the clothes he deems necessary into a little bag and throws it over his shoulder. He turns off the light and trudges from the bedroom. He opens the front door and turns around for a last goodbye to the life he could have had. And then the door is shut behind him and he walks off into the cool night air. Travis's headlights spill over an abandoned barn on the edge of a farm off the interstate. Dax had called him back within minutes of being informed of the situation with information from a source in the police department. This was code for a past or current hookup, and he had told Dax that there'd been some activity out there, but there was never anyone around when the cops had showed up. It was a barn that had stood decrepit and abandoned since Travis was a kid, and he had never seen anyone out here when he was around in the past. As he steps from the car, he leaves the lights on, walking cautiously up to the old hangar door. It creaks in the low wind, and Travis stands in the opening, peering inside with the help of the headlights. As he moves to enter the building, the headlights blink for a moment, one at a time, as if someone had run in front of them. Travis spins but finds no one there. His eyes are adjusting to the dark, and as he steps cautiously into the building, carefully around old hunting traps and broken tools, he searches high and low but finds nothing. He's about to abandon the search, but he trips on an old board laying haphazardly on the ground. He hears the sound of paper scraping on the underside of the board, and as he pulls it up, he props it against a post, but drops it quickly at what he finds. Billy manages to make it to the edge of town on foot, and he's so tired that he stops, looking around on the only road. He spots a blinking sign far down, and as he walks towards it, his eyes are widening in the increasingly dark night. He walks up to the sign and reads, "The Star Motel, vacancy board," and he walks into the lobby, buying two nights with the last of the cash he'd saved up in Kansas. Travis shakes as he dusts off the pictures pinned to the boards. A portrait of each of Billy's family members, as best he could remember, is stuck to it, along with an assortment of yellowed documents. A red X is drawn across one of Billy's brothers, Nash, another over the face of his oldest sister, Rose. Only Billy's mother and his other brother, Jed, remain unmarred. As Travis plucks a paper from the board, his phone begins to loudly buzz. "Shit," he hisses, jumping at the sound. "Yeah," he answers, his tone thready. "He's not here. Billy's gone," Dax says quietly. "No," Travis whispers, his eyes welling as he hears it. "I'm sorry, Travis. I'll have a search party out in a snap. Stay strong," Dax says. Travis hangs up the phone and drops to the ground. Wiping his eyes and gritting his teeth, he's determined to save Billy somehow, but as he reads each of the documents on the board, he realizes the story of William Lewis and his family is much more complicated than anyone ever expected. Billy throws his bag on the ground in the room and sits heavily on the edge of the bed, putting his hand to his head. Tears threaten to fall again, but he wipes his eyes, doing his best to stay strong this time. He finds the remote and turns on the TV, flipping to the first channel that isn't static. He stares blankly at the screen as a documentary on the human gene plays on mute. After a while, his phone buzzes in his pocket, but when he reads Travis on the caller alert, he hits end and then turns the phone off. He holds it in his hand, rubbing the shiny screen and losing his mind. The sound of the engine's roar is the only thing Travis hears as he hangs up his phone. Angrily, he punches the steering wheel of the car Billy had purchased for him and speeds back to the apartment. He barely has the engine shut off before he pulls the board from the back seat and runs into the building. Dax is already there, sitting in the living room with the phone pressed to his ear. "Okay. Thanks, Alex. Yeah, I'll tell him. Yeah, we can get a drink anytime. Bye." Dax hangs up quickly and turns to Travis. "Officers are searching for him. Now, what the hell is that?" he asks, pointing at the board. "Read for yourself. That's his family tree." Dax hands the board over. The tall man's eyes grow quickly wide as he figures out what Travis has already pieced together. "Billy, he isn't his dad's kid?" Dax asks in awe. "None of them are. Apparently, Mason, Billy's dad, is sterile. At least that's what these old medical tests from the 70s say." "So, whose kids are they?" Dax is scratching his head, staring at the board. "The papers you're holding and everything pinned to the board are mostly letters between Billy's mother, Maxine, and someone named Roger. I'm not going to go into detail, but they're love letters. They had been having some sort of affair for the last 30 years, and they would meet in some weird town and spend the weekend together," Travis explains. His tone is now even, finally figuring out why Billy's father, or at least who he thought his father was, had been hounding them. Dax's head is spinning. "So how did Mason not realize that they weren't his kids?" he asks. "Well, according to a letter right after Billy's first brother was born, Mason attributes it to God and his own virility, but Roger and Maxine are obviously their real parents," Travis says. "Okay, I'm getting the idea, but why chase Billy down? Why did his dad do all this shit to the farmhand? What do the X's mean?" Travis's face darkens at the questions. In the most recent letter to Maxine, Roger tells her that she should leave Mason. He says that they should go be together on their own. And I'm gonna guess that she told Mason what she was thinking of doing. I think, honestly, David was just some sort of casualty, a wrong place, wrong time circumstance. But these other medical tests, they're more recent, from the 90s, and they tell another story about Mason. Read this one. Travis points to a piece of paper on the board and a handwritten note. Patients should seek help for chemical correction. Recommend constant monitoring and involuntary admittance to hospital. Dax reads off the old paper. So, it looks like almost 30 years of hard work and heavy drinking must have caused Mason to lose it when Maxine crushed his whole world. I know he was never the most caring man, at least I don't think he was, but I guess when she told him that, he snapped. And those X's, those mean, I think... Travis gulps, unable to finish his sentence. Dax once again covers his mouth in horror. No. God, no. He murmurs. He's killed them, Dax, Travis says, shuffling through the papers to pull out old articles from the time right after Travis picked Billy up out of the ditch that he'd fallen into up until Rose's murder a week prior. Dax collapses in on himself, unable to process it all, but he speaks. I made sure Leslie and Jenny are safe, and so are the parents, he says, the only good news he can provide. Thank you. What about Billy? Anything? Travis asks. I'm sure they're doing their best to find him. Billy paces the room, clenching the phone and hating himself. He'd never felt more alone, more useless, or more vulnerable in his life. He can't even sit down. He moves to try and run from his thoughts, but he can't escape them. They keep catching up to him and swirling around until he puts his hand to his head and falls to his knees, screaming in agony from the pain. He feels his loss of control and hurls his phone, watching as it smashes into the mirror above the dresser. He immediately crawls over to it, and it lays in a pile of broken glass. He ignores the pain of the glass in his hands and knees and scrambles for it, looking at it, cursing for being so careless with the only thing that could reconnect him with Travis. A giant crack runs across the screen, and Billy sobs, clutching the phone to his chest and crying. Travis paces the bedroom of the apartment, staring at the bed where he'd spent the best time of his life sleeping next to a man that he'd loved. He taps his leg with his hand nervously and stares at the floor blankly. He pulls his phone from his pocket and calls Billy again, listening to his voicemail and leaving yet another plea for him to come home. He'd already explained what he'd found, no need to rehash it, but he just asks Billy to please come back home again. In the dark motel room, Billy lay on his bed facing the side of it where Travis would have laid. He stares at the undisturbed side and cries again, silently weeping into the musty duvet. In the apartment bedroom, now dark with night, Travis lays on the bed facing the side of it where Billy would have been. He stares at the undisturbed sheets and cries, his tears soaking into the blanket that still smelled like Billy. We made it through. It was a little clunky. I've listened to it, and I know it's not perfect, but do you kind of at least get what I was trying to do there? I think after the first couple of breaks, it makes sense. It may not be the most, whatever the word for aesthetically pleasing is, but for your ear, I don't know. Let's think audibly pleasing, I guess we could say. But it kind of makes sense. Me looking at it, it makes perfect sense, because you get each segment where whatever's happening with Travis or Billy is happening, and then a break in the text and four little ellipses, or no, that's not ellipses, it's a actually maybe they don't have a name, like the little stars, like star 69 69, like star on your phone pad. I don't know if the thing has a name, but like that, and then you can tell what's going on. But when you're reading it, the only way to really signal that there's a break besides explicitly saying it with words is a sound effect, really. Or I guess a really long gap, but I think that would sound worse than just a sound effect. What I don't love is that my microphone, the volume on it is, there's no way to really modulate it or change it at all. It's just what it is. And so sometimes, because the sound effects are so crystal clear, and my voice in a microphone, in a closet, in an old leaky bedroom, in an old leaky apartment, in a really noisy part of town isn't so clear. That's the part I don't love, that difference in sound. But what are you going to do? I don't have $1 billion to invest in recording equipment and building a studio, because if I did, I would probably be building a giant house with a recording studio in it and not recording a podcast. So, you know, I'd be like a SoundCloud rapper or something. But that's chapter 32. Hopefully you found something to enjoy in it. Definitely a twist, which, let me tell you a little something. When I wrote it the first time, that twist did not exist. When I wrote it when I was 16, it was very linear. It was Billy's dad is completely, well, I guess he wouldn't be completely mentally stable, but there was no reason for him to act this way. He was just homophobic, and that was it. I'm not saying that doesn't happen, because I'm sure it does, and historically we know it does, but it's not as common now. It's a storyline that, one, has been played out horribly in real life and in books and all that. Like, when I read Brokeback Mountain for the first time after I watched the movie, I wanted to throw up, because it's basically the same thing. These people are gay, they're chased down for being gay, and they're beaten to a pulp, they're murdered. We've seen it before. Not saying that I wouldn't love for someone to write another story, like, actually I wouldn't, it would make me sad, but I'm sure it would still make a fantastic story. Everything's already been done, so why not do it again? But I wanted something that was a little more of a twist, something that, even if it wasn't what you were expecting, it was more of the Murder, She Wrote model, where you watch the entire episode of Murder, She Wrote, and you can pay really close attention and still not get it, because the hints, unless you are looking for them, or you've seen the episode before, they're so subtle that you don't know what's going to happen until it happens. And maybe I'm just dumb. I don't know. I tried going back and dropping little tiny hints, because I added that when I was like 18 or 19, so I still kind of consider it part of the original, because I still had a very different worldview than I do now, and than I have for the last few years. But I tried to go back and add some of the hints that maybe that was not really the reason that he was being chased down. And it didn't, I don't know, when I went back and read it as a full-grown adult, it didn't really make sense for someone to chase their child across the country specifically to either murder them or bring them back into the fold just because they're gay. At least to me, it didn't, and that's just my view. I'm sure it has happened and makes sense to somebody out there, and for that I am truly sorry. But it made a little more sense for Mason, Billy's father, to kind of just become unhinged after maybe knowing for a while what had been going on between Billy and David when they worked on the farm together, and then his mother drops this bomb and suddenly, boom, everything has fallen apart. Everything makes no sense to him in his mind, and everything around him just comes apart. His reality is broken. And then the people around him sort of just feed on that. You know, his friends, the sheriff, everyone around kind of feed into that. And the whole time reading it, it seems like it's this one thing. He's just homophobic. It doesn't really make a lot of sense, but because when you read a story, usually you kind of suspend that disbelief of something being unbelievable. It makes sense. But I did want it to be grounded in a more, not expected reality, but a more realistic sort of situation. Something that could make sense. You know, we've seen literal murder that happens with obsession, that happens with people who have issues with their mental health or need help and don't have that help or don't get that help or refuse that help. Jodi Arias comes to mind. And I feel bad for her a little bit. Like, I know she murdered someone, but if you watch the Lifetime movie, honestly, you start to feel bad for her, but that's not important. But you know what I mean? That's more grounded in a sense of reality, at least, even though I don't think really that probably would happen, or realistically that would happen, but it makes more sense. It makes more sense that Mason has been under this crazy impression that over the last 30 years he's been raising his children, and maybe he wasn't so dumb that he didn't realize that his wife was having an affair, but he just didn't want to believe it. And then just with like that, with a snap, he's done, he's unhinged, he's going after whoever's left. And I guess I kind of left some stuff out on purpose, like how he manages to get from wherever Billy's siblings are back to him. But I guess if you're a farmer working for 30 years on your own farm, you have enough money to fly back and forth and just fulfill that instability. So that's why I did that. That's why I added it, was for that. Because originally, I think, if I'm remembering correctly, I won't spoil it, but Billy and Travis never really separated like this, and they just kind of ended up in the same place as a bunch of other people, and it went bad. That's not as fun. Maybe it would make more sense, but it was just a little more fun. This is kind of one of those, I would never compare myself to Hitchcock, but like a Hitchcockian twist where everything is this one way, and then all of a sudden the rug is pulled out from underneath you, and it's a complete 180. It's a complete shift in what you thought was happening. And I don't think I did it particularly well. I don't think I'm the next great author, but I do think that the story that you absorb into your brain and kind of work with and tell it back to yourself makes sense. Do you know what I mean? It makes more sense logically that this is what happened, this is why it happened, and then all of a sudden it doesn't. That's not why it happened. That's not why everyone is being hounded and tortured, and not why Billy has fled his hometown, you know? But hopefully you enjoyed that. It gets even crazier, if you can believe it, the next few chapters, all the way up until the end. And then we do get an ending. And after that, I think maybe I'll do an episode or a couple episodes just to cap off the week and give myself the weekend to think about what I'm going to do, where I just talk about kind of what was resolved, what wasn't resolved, what you might have thought was resolved, and kind of where I'm taking these characters in the next installment. Not that I would like give you a preview, but kind of an idea of who's left, or who you thought was left or wasn't left, and who is actually left. And I think that could be kind of fun, you know? We'll end up with like 30 some odd episodes. I won't say it's like an audiobook, because audiobooks don't have intros and outros every 20 minutes, but if you just listen and follow through with it, you kind of do get that linear narrative, even if I'm talking in between. You know what I mean? It's still a story you can absorb. You just gotta dance around me, which I'm sorry for, but I feel like, not that I want to like get myself out there, but I also want a chance to explain myself after you listen and before you listen. So anyway, I appreciate whoever is out there listening, and I will talk to you tomorrow. Bye.